Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's TicketKing.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Falls to the Pack. I'm sure you can tell by my voice, it is a Victory Sunday evening. The Green Bay Packers beat the Chicago Bears and evened up the all-time series against their most hated rival with a thrilling, well, turned into a thrilling 30-27 victory. And we are here at Pulse of the Pack to break it down for you. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, and I could not be more giddy. Joined with me, as always, is our upbeat lollipop, Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you feeling?
I went full upbeat lollipop today on Twitter. I'm sure you saw. I'm sure everybody else saw. But it was one of those games. This game was why we are NFL fans. This game is why we are Packers fans. This was the epitome of the highs, the lows. Of course, it was Packers-Bears. Of course, it had to be Week 16, 15. Of course, it had to be cold weather, Soldier Field, all of the elements. You said most hated. I think you said the word rival. Jacob, you and I have talked about how this isn't much of a rivalry over the past 20 years because the Packers have dominated it. But somehow, some way, and about 3 hours ago, maybe 4 hours ago, if somebody had told me we'd be sitting here talking about a Packers victory after I'm watching the Bears at first and goal inside their own 10-yard line with not a lot of time left on the clock and the Packers having to march down and score a touchdown, I would have said, you crazy. So it is an amazing day. This is Sunday. We're recording this on Sunday right after the game. And I have to say, today was one of the coldest days in Minnesota history on recent record. So we got into the negative 20 plus in some parts of the state. So great day to be inside watching football.
Absolutely a great day to be inside. And for those of you that know where I'm living, I was actually given an opportunity to get tickets to this game, and I turned them down three separate times because I'm not sitting in a frigid Soldier Field to watch any game, to be honest with you, let alone a Packers team that should dominate a bad Bears team. But you're right, Jason. Today was frustrating, and then all of a sudden you're thinking that this game is well in hand and over. And then it's frustrating again, and now you're hoping they just hold on for their dear lives. And then all Aaron Rodgers does is make memories in that litter box that is Soldier Field, because it's 27 apiece with just under a minute left, and he finds his guy, Jordy Nelson, deep down the field for a 60-yard pass. They get up, they spike the ball. Mason Crosby makes a 32-yard field goal twice, once because he was iced, and a second time to win the game. Packers win 30-27, and we are here to break it down for you. Let's start early. Obviously, the main focus at the start of the game was on Aaron Rodgers' legs, his mobility. He had some Houdini plays in the pocket. He found Jared Cook for a couple plays. Ty Montgomery scores the first touchdown of the game, and then the Bears go on to score 10 consecutive points. It's 10-10 at halftime, which is frustrating because the Packers are making a lot of little mistakes throughout the first half that those are the kind of mistakes a good team needs to make for a bad team to beat them. And the Packers were doing that. And then in the third quarter, Matt Barkley showed up. And I mean that in a bad way. I know Matt Barkley finished with a good stat line. I know one of the interceptions was not his fault, but reality is he turned the ball over four times today. Packers got four takeaways today. They all count the same. They didn't turn the ball over once. But I felt the tide turned in this game on a play from none other than Hall of Famer Julius Peppers coming back to Chicago, and he strip sacks and recovers a fumble from Matt Barkley on the first play of the second half. So, Jason, just kind of give me your general thoughts on the first half before we break down the second half and the play by Peppers.
Well, and this, as you saw me kind of tweet about, this game was all about the odd quarters. The even quarters were awful, minus the last minute of the fourth quarter. So it wasn't a tale of two halves. It was a tale of two halves, but it wasn't even halves. It was the second and the fourth quarter, and it was about making plays once again. Last week, five turnovers, four interceptions, a fumble recovery. Finally, the Packers made some big plays. I was screaming for it all through the four-game losing streak because they weren't getting it done. They needed to do it again today. You knew watching the Bears move the ball in that fourth quarter, score those two quick touchdowns, that they were going to be able to move the ball. For whatever reason, the Packers were giving up the yards. They weren't covering the middle of the field. All the usual Achilles heel things were happening. Somebody needed to make a play. You knew it was going to come down to a turnover. You hoped that they weren't out of that magic. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix already has two interceptions on the day. Micah Hyde has another interception on the day, which came on a Hail Mary, so it was kind of a fluke gimme at the end of the first half. It wasn't really a great play by Hyde. And you have, you mentioned, Jacob, the pepper strip sack, which when we get back to that, you know, I have some interesting things to say about that. Hyde makes the big pass breakup on third down. The Bears decide to kick a field goal. I don't know if John Fox was coaching for his job. There were some very, very unhappy Bears fans on Twitter who wanted to know why the Bears, with nothing to lose, didn't go for it and try to go for the win instead of kicking the field goal for overtime and leaving too much clock, time on clock for Aaron Rodgers. I didn't feel great about it at the end. It just seemed to have the recipe of – reminded me of last year, Jacob, to be honest with you. Reminded me of the Bears game at Lambeau last year. Reminded me of the Lions game. And all the divisional games that Green Bay lost at Lambeau Field, it reminded me of that. Here's a game they should win against a team they should beat, but a team that is playing above themselves because of the rivalry and the pride that they have. And somehow – the Packers were able to overcome it. But as you saw, upbeat lollipop was in full effect. I did not feel very confident towards the end. And, in fact, I had to start rewriting my game balls piece two or three different times because that game was just so up and down. It was quite the roller coaster. That's the best word I can use to describe it.
Yeah, what a game. I mean, up and down, roller coaster, whatever analogy you want to use, it's fantastic. And that's why we're football fans. You know, 27-10, if the Packers had gone on to win that game 34-17, that would have been great. But in my opinion, this was better. And, you know, you mentioned some of the things that go back and forth, but this game really did just start to take off in the third quarter. Peppers gets a strip sack, and the Packers end up kicking a field goal on that drive because they miss a couple opportunities. Davante Adams, listen, I'm Team Davante. And I've bragged about it all year, and today I'm here to take it from you people. I'm not going to hide. Davante Adams dropped two touchdowns today. This was a case of bad Davante today, and I have no defense for the two balls that he dropped, other than I just ask you to remember he's been good all season. No, this is not a trend, more so of a blip. Hopefully he got it out of his system and is ready to make some plays down the field in these last two games because the Packers are going to need him. That's just reality. But they get the strip sack, and then Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Matt Barkley, Ryan Wood from the Press Gazette said Matt Barkley might have put Ha-Ha Clinton Dix in the Pro Bowl today because two more interceptions hit him right in the chest on both of them. Matt Barkley just, you know, he does some nice things. He's an okay backup, in my opinion, but he's just not very good. He's not a starting quarterback. I know he did some things in the fourth quarter. I get all that. The Bears had a chance to win. I want to go back, though. We're kind of bouncing around a little bit, but that's okay. I want to go to that 4th and 2 from the goal line. The Bears are down by 3. And I'm sitting there saying, if I'm John Fox, I'm going for it because this is the Bears Super Bowl. What do they have to lose? You know, their last game of the season is against the Vikings. The Vikings aren't playing for a division crown. It's unlikely they'll be playing for a playoff berth in that game. This is the Bears' chance to ruin somebody's season. Instead, John Fox, true to his nature, goes conservative and kicks the field goal, and he gives Aaron Rodgers a chance to beat them. He did some weird things with clock management on the final drive, but it really does all go back to the 4th and 2 from the goal line because, like I said, what do you got to lose? If you don't, even if they don't get it, they have two timeouts left. They can force the backers to punt. Yeah, they'll probably have to kick a long field goal for a shot to tie the game, but you still have a chance to do that if your defense just forces a 3-and-out. Maybe his thought was that Ty Montgomery and Christine Michael had been gashing them in the running game, and you didn't think they could get a stop. I don't know, but I do know that in general, John Fox is, for all the flack Mike McCarthy gets for being a conservative coach, John Fox is the king of that. If it's 4th and 1 at the 35-yard line, I will bet you that he punts. And the times that I am wrong, I'll be happy to admit that I'm wrong, but I'll bet more often than not I am right. And that's what I'm going with on that fourth down. The Bears totally should have gone for that. They had nothing to lose. But as I was saying, the two interceptions by Clinton Dix set up 14 points and really lead to the star of the game, and that was Ty Montgomery. And, Jason, I know we were talking about running backs and how the Packers don't have one. I think they do, and I think his name is Ty Montgomery. I think you're looking at not only the Packers' main running back for the rest of this year, but also for some of next year. What are your thoughts on the way Ty Montgomery played today in a new position?
Well, I don't think it's really, I mean, new kind of tongue-in-cheek maybe or quote fingers. I mean, if you listen to a lot of the podcasts that cover the Packers, Mike McCarthy said this week that Ty Montgomery hasn't been to a wide receiver meeting in months. So he is a full-fledged running back. You're not allowed to change numbers mid-season. That's the only reason why he still wears the 88. He was outstanding today from the get-go. The thing that stood out to me was the drive that he has, literally, physically the drive that he has. His legs never stop moving. He is the anti-James Starks. He's got that great low leverage. A couple times it looked like he was stuffed in the backfield, just kept his feet moving, and actually on his first long run, that was what happened. He kind of broke out of a tackle, and I think the Bears defense thought they had him bottled up, and all of a sudden Ty Montgomery's racing down the sideline, and he doesn't have breakaway speed, but he's got that clamor in him, I guess. I should say hammer in him, because he runs hard. And he showed that on the touchdown run. You know, he just rams his way in there. And apparently, according to some of the post-game comments that McCarthy made today that I saw just briefly on Twitter, it sounds like Montgomery approached him about doing more out of the backfield and being a running back more than a wide receiver. And then, so therefore, there you have it. You got Ty Montgomery in the backfield. You know, Christian Michael was a great compliment to him. But, I mean, 160 yards from a guy that was a wide receiver coming out of college who didn't really play a ton of running back. I mean, that's tough to beat. I mean, Eddie Lacy's never even gone off for 150-plus and two scores. So, you know, that was – and I don't remember if Montgomery scored a second time or he only had one touchdown. Actually, he did score twice. I can't say enough good things about him. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's one of those things where in hindsight now, we're probably looking back and just saying, why did we go with this sooner? But, you know, I think the Packers had to try to figure out what they had and how to best use Montgomery. And I think it all kind of started, Jacob, with the Atlanta game. You know, they didn't win it, but that was where you saw some of the things that Montgomery could do out of the backfield. But that was a lot of, like, you know, scat plays and screens and dump offs and stuff like that in the passing game, which I still think is something that they could do more of with Ty. But as a pure runner, just flat out outstanding. The numbers don't lie. He was incredible today.
I think you're actually thinking of the first Chicago game because Montgomery was inactive for the Falcons game. But nonetheless, your point holds of finding what they could do. I think at the end of this season, regardless of how it finishes, in reality right now is the Detroit Lions lost today. The Green Bay Packers control their own destiny. They win their next two games. They're NFC North champions. They're in the playoffs. Obviously, the attention will go to Aaron Rodgers, and rightfully so. He's been phenomenal in this four-game winning streak, and obviously it will go toward his run-the-table comment. But I think you'll also look at Ty Montgomery as a big piece as to why they're doing what they're doing. He's a pass-catching back that they haven't had really since Aaron Rodgers has been here, since Mike McCarthy has been here. And the other thing is he's not just a gimmick running back, and you saw that today. You know, he's doing running back things. And, you know, if he wears number 34, you're saying that guy's a really good running back. But since he wears number 88, everybody's like, oh, it's a wide receiver playing running back. And I understand that. But at the same time, you got me thinking ahead. And listen, there's a lot of things that can change between now and the beginning of next season. But I think you're looking at the Green Bay Packers starting running back in 2017. And obviously there's, you know, chips to fall yet with Eddie Lacy. Christine Michael will probably get some consideration, I would imagine. He had a big run today as well, and he looked better than James Starks has since last season. You've got a lot of things that can change as far as the draft. There's a deep running back class coming in, and it'll be interesting to see that. But, I mean, as of right now, if I were placing odds, I would bet the Packers starting running back next season is Ty Montgomery. And this is a guy who they just need to find a way to get the ball into his hands, whether it's as – a guy catching the ball out of the backfield, whether it's a guy moving into the slot and playing receiver, or whether it's him being your bell cow and running the ball. And you know, Jason, you said it best. He was phenomenal today. He was the Packers' best offensive player on a day where, you know, the Packers don't have a running game that you thought that you could rely on. And they had more rushing yards than passing yards at one point in the game. I don't know if it actually ended up finishing that way, but it was phenomenal by Ty Montgomery. And then I mentioned after the second Clinton Dix interception, Christine Michael takes off on the right side, stiff arms a Bears defender, and that's going to be replayed on highlights over and over again. I feel for the kid that got pushed down because, well, he's on a poster right now if they ever make Christine Michael posters. And it's 27-10, and all is well, and the Packers are going to blow away the Bears and control their own destiny for the next 2 weeks until they didn't. The fourth quarter hit. The Bears went down the field, scored two touchdowns. The Packers' offense continued to go three and out and stall. Bears kick a field goal to tie the game. And then Aaron Rodgers, when the chips are down, give me that guy, because I know his final stat line today doesn't look phenomenal. He didn't throw a touchdown pass. He wasn't, you know, swinging the ball up and down the field. There were times that, you know, you were worried about his health because, you know, he just clearly was not himself as far as mobility. There were plays that were obvious. He would have been able to extend them if he had two healthy legs. He has zero. And he gets the ball back in a tie game on the road, and they go, I think it's negative 1 yard on the first two plays. They don't do anything. And it's third and 11. Rodgers rolls left. Jordy Nelson, deep post down the middle of the field, right on the money. Catch. They sprint down the field. They spike the ball. Mason Crosby wins the game for them. But what it comes down to for me, for Aaron Rodgers, is you're watching. You get these guys that I've talked about on this show before, and it's the ones who I have said, you know, they snuggle with their number four jersey at night, and heaven forbid that somebody else be good because they feel they have to protect the legacy of Brett Favre. And let me be honest with you guys. You don't have to protect anything about Brett Favre's legacy. Brett Favre's an all-time great. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the Packers. And there's no shame in saying that he's second or third on that list. And if you ask me, he's third on that list. But nonetheless, Aaron Rodgers finds Jordy Nelson down the middle of the field. And before that, he's running on no legs. He's sacrificing his body trying to get first downs. He's taking hits that make you just go, oh my gosh, what's wrong? You know, he needs to not do that. He needs to slide, whatever. But he's sacrificing his body. He's putting his well-being on the line for this team to make the playoffs. And that's what he's done the last 4 weeks. These last four games, I know I just mentioned Montgomery. I know Jordy Nelson's had some great weeks. I know Devontae Adams has played really well. I know they did some really good things against Seattle across the board last week. Aaron Rodgers is the MVP of this team, and I think right now he's making a very good case. If the Packers win these next two games, you can make a very good argument. He is the MVP of the NFL, the whole thing, not just the Packers. And it's because of things like he did today. You've got all that nonsense that we discussed after the Redskins game about how he doesn't get along with his family, and that's why he's not playing well, or Olivia Munn is a problem. All that stuff was nonsense anyways, but it's even more so now. And you've got that stuff from Bob McGinn saying that Rodgers has fallen from the ranks of the greats, and he's not as good as he used to be. You've got guys saying that he's lost a step, he's lost some skills, he's washed up, he's whatever. He's not clutch. He can't lead a big drive in the fourth quarter to win the game. And then he just pisses all over all of those narratives with one throw to Jordy Nelson. In a hostile environment, I know Chicago is not exactly the 85 Bears anymore. That's still a tough play. That's a tough throw to make in negative five weather. Aaron Rodgers was phenomenal. And I think all that stuff can be put to bed. Jason, I am done gushing about the quarterback. What do you have to say about the play of one Aaron Charles Rodgers?
Well, before we begin, I want to apologize to our listeners because you're right. I know this was like a while ago during my last little segment there, because I can't stand it when guys are on a radio or they're on a podcast and they can't remember a play or a game or a year. Like Bob McGinn is really bad at remembering the year that things happen, and I'm sitting there screaming at the radio as I'm listening to it, and I'm like, oh, it was this year, it was that year, duh, it was this player, that player. I don't know how I forgot that Montgomery didn't play in that Atlanta game, but I think you're right, Jacob. It was the Chicago game, but I just had to acknowledge my error there, because I strive to be better than that. So, but Rodgers is a supreme talent at the quarterback position. And Jacob, to take your point a step further, and I think maybe this might have been part of what you were saying, is that Favre is not Rodgers. Rodgers is not Favre. So they can both be great in their own mind or in their own right. But when you want to talk about the precision and the play of the quarterback position and the confidence that it instills in the fans, I can only speak for myself. I'm sure there were a lot of people, and I think many of them probably, you know, if you dug really deep, would tell you that it was in hindsight, who said they were always confident when Favre had the ball late in the game with the Packers down because he had that comeback magic and they knew he was going to do it. Well, I didn't. I mean, I hoped, and I was excited as hell when he did it, but I was probably just as excited when Favre won a game because he didn't throw an interception as he led the Packers to a victory versus when Rodgers does it, I just stand there and I celebrate because I'm like, he did it again. He just does it again and again and again with these throws. And, you know, we laugh about the preseason and training camp and all these, you know, ridiculous drills and the hype with these players coming out of training camp. Let me remind you, and Jacob, I think you've probably maybe been there for some of these. I've never been to a training camp practice. I need to probably start thinking about making that part of my routine now that I'm close enough to drive out. The throws into the basket, and I mean, we're talking about into the net, I should say, and we're talking about a net that's like big enough to fit a football, not a huge garbage bin. You know, the accuracy, the precision, just he's not always there. He missed Davante Adams deep last week against Seattle, and, you know, he misses throws here and there. He's missed Jordy Nelson a few times deep because I think he's miscalculating Nelson's speed. He's still going off of Nelson circa 2014. But ironically, because his brain is just so prolific, I mean, you've listened to him recount plays and talk about plays from start to finish as if he was in the huddle and in that play in the moment. And he's talking about it days later, and he just remembers so much and has such amazing recall. Well, his brain perfectly calculated Nelson's speed today, and they finally connected on a deep ball when it mattered the absolute most for this entire season, because at this point, every game is a must-win game, and so whatever game they're playing in right now is the most important game. Whatever moment or whatever minute they're in that game is the most important minute of the season. So it is not hyperbole for me to say at the most important time this year, Aaron Rodgers hits the most Aaron Rodgers throw to Jordy Nelson to set the Packers up to kick a game-winning field goal. He's just phenomenal. There's no way that we're fully appreciating his talent and everything that he brings to this team. I believe in him because he's not going to put himself or this team in a position to fail. It looked bad when he was trying to get away on a scramble in the beginning of the game, and he got chased down by a defensive tackle, something that would never, ever happen if he was healthy on two healthy legs. But he knows that he can still make these throws. He knows that he can still do things that are going to make this offense click and that are better than most other quarterbacks in the league on a half a leg, on one leg. And he's absolutely incredible, and I believe in him, and I believe now, after we got all the funk out of the way that you talked about, Jacob, during the losing streak and all the mess of the family issues and all the other garbage that was brought up, when Aaron Rodgers throws the ball, once again, I'm confident it's going to land in a Packers receiver's hand, and good things are going to happen once it does.
I think you said it best when you said there's no way that we're fully appreciating his talents, but this particular show, we're going to try. And something else I want to talk about then is that's four wins in a row, and the Packers are two-thirds of the way to Aaron Rodgers' run-the-table comment. In 2014, it was R-E-L-A-X, and we obviously know the Packers were 1-2. They finished that season 12-4 and were a colossal collapse away from playing in a Super Bowl. Since declaring he truly believes the team can run the table, that was less than a month ago. After four straight losses, they're 4-0, and they control their own destiny in the NFC North. And it is what you want. To kind of paraphrase Joe Girardi and my baseball podcast title, Girardi famous for saying it's not what you want when something bad happens, but this is what you want. Mike McCarthy really said it after the game. At this point in the year, all you can ask for is control your own destiny. If the Packers do not make the playoffs at this point, it is because of something they did. They will not be scoreboard watching in week 16 or week 17 other than their own. They beat the Vikings. They beat the Lions. They'll play the Giants, the Cowboys, the Bucks, or some other wild card team in the first round of the playoffs at Lambeau Field and have a chance to advance potentially to the Super Bowl. And that starts with Aaron Rodgers because, again, we were mentioning the garbage, and one other garbage narrative, in my opinion, is the leader of men stuff, and I've talked about this before. Aaron's not a rah-rah guy. I know that. I've seen him interact with his teammates in a way that a lot of people probably haven't had the privilege to. Just seeing what I've seen, I know he's not a rah-rah guy. By saying he believes his team can run the table, and yes, that was some coach speak, player speak to some degree. However, that also puts a challenge on his teammates and himself to live up to that bargain. Because in order to run the table, Rodgers had to play better, and his teammates had to play better. And they all knew that, and that's what started. So I don't know if Aaron Rodgers has a crystal ball or superpowers or whatever, but when you're the best quarterback in the NFL, and that's what he is, you can say things like that, and then more often than not, his play backs it up. And I think that is what is the most impressive part, because in 2014, he says RELAX. He wins the NFL MVP that year. He was the best quarterback in the NFL. He was phenomenal all season long. This year he says run the table, and he's making a run at a third MVP season. Jason, again, I don't want to sound like I'm gushing too much over the quarterback, because I think that as a whole we tend to do too much of that in the NFL. For example, like Dak Prescott being crowned as one of the best quarterbacks in football after 12 games. That's one example. There are others. But in this stage, I feel like it's appropriate, because really this winning streak starts with the quarterback. Because you go back when this winning streak started, the Packers get the ball first against the Philadelphia Eagles, and they go right down the field and score a touchdown. Sets the tone for the entire game. Packers offense was great. Against the Texans the following week, he leads a touchdown drive of 90-plus yards and 89 yards to win that game. Last week against the Seahawks, he hits Devontae Adams to start the game and sets the tone. Today, he makes a couple plays, escapes, and eventually it's a rushing touchdown for Ty Montgomery, but it's 7-0 early. Aaron Rodgers is setting the tone, and today, obviously, he finishes with the big throw. Setting the tone, leading by example, and dominating when his team needs him the most. So please, shut me up, but give me your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and some of the things he's said and delivered on.
Well, it's just, this is why I said, this is part of the reason why I said I believe in him, because he's not just saying things to say it. Brett Favre used to kind of do that, and when you're a good teammate and when you're a competitor, of course, you're never going to give up. What do you expect players to say? What do you expect coaches to say? You know, this is why I think it's kind of funny sometimes when players guarantee victories and everybody's like, oh, you just gave the opposing team bulletin board material. Well, what are they going to say? I mean, what do you want them? Don't you want your team to think they're going to win? I mean, and he delivered big time in 2014. That collapse was not on Aaron Rodgers. The RELAX, I mean, they had a chance to really make something out of that. And this year's story isn't finished, you know, isn't totally written yet. So, you know, we don't know what is going to become. It's week to week, you know, but you have to believe. And Aaron Rodgers is making believers out of all of us each week that the Packers play well. I mean, they've won 4 games in a row now. You know, they lost 4. They've won 4 now. They're over 500. They've guaranteed they will not have a losing season. And they've got a very good chance over these next couple of weeks, with as far as the matchups go, to win this division. And now that they're in the driver's seat of doing so, they can do so on their own now. They don't need to watch the scoreboards around the league anymore. You know, they can win these next 2 games and make everything a moot point. You know, they got some of the help that they needed today from the Giants in beating the Detroit Lions, and with the Vikings losing to the Colts. And I'll throw another jab in there, since I live in this state here. I mean, the Packers lost to the Colts at home as well, but it was a little bit of a closer game. The Colts absolutely boat stomped the Vikings today. So, and they can't win the division now. So how quickly the tables turn, you know, Jacob, I think you wanted to, I don't want to steal your thunder, because I know we talked about our early season predictions and we talked about where we thought things were going to end. And we've texted offline about how we thought the season might shake out. And Minnesota started out 5-0. You know, Green Bay in their first 5 games, you know, how did they look? And then for the next 5 games after that, I mean, this league is just so week to week. Aaron Rodgers is absolutely the reason why the Packers, on one leg, is absolutely the reason why the Packers are doing what they're doing. And I don't think it's too far of a stretch for him to be in the conversation for MVP. And he might not win it because they did have such a rough patch over those 4 weeks. But I won't be surprised, and I'll almost be disappointed, if the final votes come in for MVP this year and Rodgers doesn't have at least one or two to his name.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the Minnesota Vikings because I told every single one of you that were willing to listen when the Vikings were 5-0, and everybody thought the division was a wash and the Packers couldn't catch up because the Vikings had already beaten them and they were up by two or three games in that division. I told you, what the Vikings did early in the season is not sustainable. Sam Bradford is Sam Bradford. And listen, I know they've had injuries. I get that. They played without Harrison Smith today. Big loss. They lost Teddy Bridgewater at the beginning of the season, but we knew that when they started 5-0. The Vikings' offensive line is a dumpster fire. Adrian Peterson came back today. Little to no impact on the game whatsoever. Adrian Peterson is old, he's washed up, and he's not as good as he used to be. And you saw that before he got injured this year. I think you're watching Adrian Peterson's final moments in a Minnesota Vikings uniform. I think that next year the Vikings will move on from him, try to spend his money elsewhere because he simply does not have the same burst he used to have. And when it comes to running backs, on a much smaller level, we saw it with James Starks. James Starks was explosive. He was a weapon the last two seasons, 2014, 2015. This year he's a bum. And you saw today exactly why he's a bum, because Ty Montgomery and Christine Michael, neither one of those guys are going to mistake you. You are going to be mistaken for David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell or prime Adrian Peterson. But they look so much better than James Starks does. Why? Starks just hit the wall, and that's what happens. Running backs hit the wall, and they're done. Same thing happened last year with Marshawn Lynch. I know Marshawn Lynch, some people may have the idea that he retired too soon. I don't. Because reality was the Seahawks offense last year was better when Marshawn Lynch didn't play. Not coincidentally, in my mind, when Marshawn Lynch came back for the playoff game against the Panthers, they dug a huge hole, and the Seahawks couldn't move the ball. I'm not saying that's all Marshawn Lynch's fault, but he was done. Adrian Peterson's done. And the Vikings, Jason, I don't like to make fun of you that much, but I know, you know, sometimes you get a little emotional and you say some things that eventually I think you end up figuring out you didn't really mean them. And one of them was
no,
the 5-0.
That never, never, ever, never, never, ever, never, never happens, Jacob. I joke.
Okay. Well, one of these comments that never happens was that you thought that the Vikings could come into Lambeau on Christmas Eve either undefeated or with one or two losses. And I thought that was just asinine. And I know I've mentioned before my disdain for the Vikings is more than any other team. I understand how that could be dismissed from me as just homerism or whatever you want to call it. But there were a lot of people that thought this Vikings team was a juggernaut. And they are a team that was all in. They traded a first-round pick for Sam Bradford. And they're, at this point, the dumb and dumber line that I've quoted the last couple weeks. So you're saying there's a chance? That's their playoff hopes right now. They cannot win the division. They will not win the division because they lost today to the Colts, and they got boat raced at home by the Colts. 34-6. They've got Green Bay and then Chicago to close out the season. Now, the Vikings could feasibly win both of those games. I, however, am not picking them to beat Green Bay, and you'll find that out later in the show exactly why. But the Vikings, I was never overly concerned about them. I always thought the Packers would have a chance with them, and it turns out the Detroit Lions are the team that the Packers need to worry about as far as winning the division. And the good news is they play them one more time. They've already beaten them. They'll have a chance to do so again on an indoor game on turf with a chance to win the NFC North, assuming they win next week against the Minnesota Vikings or both teams lose, the Lions and the Packers, that is. But just interesting how the NFL seems to work out that way. And let's be honest, I really like to point out when I'm right. Let's go to the defense. A lot of up and down. You know, they have that third quarter where it's three consecutive possessions with turnovers, sack fumble by Julius Peppers, two interceptions by Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. Bang, it's 27-10. Game over, so we thought. And then all of a sudden it wasn't, and you're hanging on to your hat at the end of the game. And it really starts, in my opinion, with Demaryius Randle. Because Demaryius Randle got benched today for Micah Hyde. And I think my opinion on Micah Hyde has been made clear at some point. Demaryius Randle was a player that we were hoping was ascending coming into the year, and he's just really had an up-and-down year. He's had games where he's gotten beat for 200-plus yards. Marvin Jones was one. Stephon Diggs early in the season. Missed some time with an injury. And Quentin Rollins, too, that's another guy. He was just getting beat all over the field today. The Bears had two receivers that, if I didn't live in this area, I would have never heard of them before the day started. And they were 11 yards away from the Bears having three 100-yard receivers against them. This is not a good offense. This is definitely a step backwards. And I think it starts with those corners, and it really kind of trickles down to the pass rush. I think the silver lining is the Bears' offensive line is not a bad unit. Josh Sitton has had a good season. Cody Whitehair has been good as a rookie. Charles Leno held his own today. Bobby Massey wasn't a dumpster fire. There was some good to that, but how concerned are you, Jason, with the inconsistency on defense? Because realistically today, outside of the first quarter, without turnovers, the Packers didn't stop the Bears.
Yeah, it wasn't what we saw last week. And last week, I think, you know, yeah, there's a product of Russell Wilson not doing well thrown in there. You know, there were some bad drops by the Seahawks receivers that helped Green Bay. And then the Seahawks just got deflated, and I think that led to it as well. That it wasn't encouraging for fans of a team that they're hoping will make the postseason to see them get just rocked defensively all day long, especially that middle of the field. That middle of the field, once again, the Achilles heel of this defense, and they go into this zone, and I don't know why. I mean, Demarius Randall was so bad he got benched at one point. So does Dom Capers feel so unconfident in who he's got out there that they have to start playing some sort of a different zone because 23 is not on the field? I mean, Demarius Randall has made some very, very big and spectacular plays. He made one last week that I compared to what we see from Sam Shields sometimes. He's got great ball skills. He took a ball away from Eric Ebron while Ebron was falling to the ground and had the presence of mind to rip it out of his hands and take it away. I mean, he makes some very, very big plays. He had that big pass breakup against the Chargers last year to preserve the Packers' undefeated start to their season. So he's definitely got a resume, but is he the linchpin? Because Quentin Rollins was getting moved on. Clinton Dix had a couple big interceptions, although we can thank Matt Barkley for being Matt Barkley. He wasn't awful today. He played pretty well in the second and the fourth quarters anyway. He did have four straight turnovers on four straight drives, and so the Packers can definitely be thankful there, but that's what football is. It's a game of opportunity. It's a game of chance, and the team that usually wins the turnover battle wins the game. So, but it's like, you know, it's not what you want to see, to use your line, Jacob, because if you're going to start playing against playoff teams, they're not going to make those mistakes. It's not going to be Matt Barkley at quarterback. You're going to have not only not Matt Barkley at quarterback, but you're going to have wide receivers and running backs who are of Pro Bowl caliber. That's just kind of how it goes when you get into very meaningful football after the regular season. So from that standpoint, it's very concerning. As far as week to week, I mean, you know, the one excuse I'll make is it's the Bears. It doesn't matter how good either team has been in the history of this rivalry. These games always seem to be competitive. They always seem to be hard fought. There is no easy game. The Bears beat the Packers last year at Lambeau Field. First of all, I mean, at home and on a night when they were honoring Brett Favre and they had Bart Starr in the house. If you can't get up for something like that, and I get that those guys don't play on the field, but then something is wrong. You know, the Packers had every reason to win that game, should have, didn't, and that was disappointing. So, you know, it's you want to see the defense rise up. And really, actually, Jacob, if you want to get real technical to me, that Micah Hyde pass breakup on third down to force the field goal at the end of the game for Chicago, hey, that's Chicago's issue if they want to kick a field goal. That was a big play. Finally, Hyde makes a big play when one is needed. And then they on offense, you know, they take over. But defensively, the pass rush was absolutely nil. And I get that Nick Perry's not out there, and Nick Perry's just as effective in run stoppage as he is as a pass rusher, and the Packers got run on today. You know, Jordan Howard is no slouch at running back, and he had himself a day. You mentioned the receivers that had 100 yards. These receivers will probably never have that many yards in a game in their career again because no one knows who any of them are. They stepped up and played well. You know, it was the no-name Bears, and you don't want to see those types of teams moving up and down the field on a Packers team that just ran the Seattle Seahawks out of the gym and are trying to do something very special and magical this season. So all those factors put together, yeah, I'm concerned, but they come out next week and they put on a show against the Minnesota Vikings at home or not. then I start to feel like, okay, you know, Chicago came out with a good game plan. They had a good matchup. You know, they had a good idea of what they wanted to do. The Packers got it done when they needed to. It didn't look pretty, but hopefully they can rise up. And that's kind of what it's become now. I don't know this. I don't know about the confidence level that I have in this defense. I just kind of cross my fingers and hope that they play more Seattle-like than they do today. One thing that I want to ask you maybe, Jacob, as I close out here is Morgan Burnett has been an unsung hero, an unsung big part of this defense. And today I'd have to go back maybe and watch the game again to see schematically what he was being asked to do, because the Bears don't have a tight end threat. And last week he was on Jimmy Graham. So without that tight end threat, you would think Morgan Burnett would be a little more versatile all over the place and doing what he does. I didn't see much from him today. Thank God Clint Dix had a big game, because the other safety was kind of a ghost.
A little bit, and you could see they were kind of asking him to play linebacker, kind of that hybrid role like he had the last couple weeks. I think the biggest thing that I figured out today was, you know, Jason, you mentioned the middle of the field, and I think the Bears did a good job of using play action because, I mean, let's be honest, coming into the game, who are you more likely to say, we don't want to let him beat us, Matt Barkley or Jordan Howard? The answer is Jordan Howard. So I think the Packers, it's almost as if their plan was to be surprised by a pass, which, having just watched the game at live speed, that's about all I've got for you as far as X's and O's, because, I mean, it's just not – I'm too emotionally invested during a game to try and figure out, you know, why something happened without a second look. But that's – I mean, you mentioned how you feel about the defense. I mean, no, the pass rush wasn't there today. You know, you mentioned Nick Perry's not playing. Clay Matthews is playing with one arm still. Julius Peppers is playing at 37 years old. Dayton Jones was a little invisible today. But, you know, the other reality is, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the Bears have professionals that are paid on the other side of the ball too. And I think their offensive line deserves some credit. And the other thing about it is, I thought the Packers' coverage scheme was poor. You know, the first touchdown to, I think it was Josh Bellamy, Demarius Randall is not even in the screen when the ball is snapped. So, McCown, wow, Bears backup quarterbacks. Barkley just flips the ball out there, and the guy runs Randall over and into the end zone for a touchdown. I mean, they were giving so much cushion to guys that, I mean, that's not DeSean Jackson there on the outside. We're not talking about just a burner that you got to be worried will run by you. I was just confused throughout the day. I think the biggest concern to me was at 27-10, that's when we as fans can get a little comfortable. It's like, okay, it's a three-possession game, about a quarter left, maybe a little less. You know, this game's pretty much over. But what was a little concerning was that it felt like the team just kind of was like, okay, now the Bears will lay down and quit. And to the Bears' credit, they didn't. I blame for that. I go about 80% on Dom Capers because I'm just at a loss of – I mean, I tried to defend him in years past. And, you know, Jason, after the Seahawks game, you and I both said that we were done, ready to move on from him. Yes, they did make the stop on the goal line, but the reality is this game should not have come down to Micah Hyde making a breakup on the last pass of the game. Kudos, however, to Mike McCarthy for his clock management in that situation. He used his timeouts on defense to give his team a chance to score, whether they needed a touchdown or, as it turned out, they needed a field goal. Kudos to him on that. Here's the other reality. It is December 18th. The Packers are 8-6. And they were 7-6 coming into this game. This is not college football. Style points do not matter. The Packers won. And they won on the road in the division against a team that wouldn't quit. No, it's not all good vibes and butterflies like it was last week when they killed the Seahawks. Reality is every game is not going to be like that. The Packers won. That to me is what matters. That is one of my biggest beefs with the way college football goes. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, I think it's pretty simple. You either won on the field or you didn't. And the argument that I was having turned out not to matter because Washington won and made the playoff. But you understand what I'm saying. My thought about college football was Michigan beat Wisconsin, Michigan beat Penn State. That should be the end of that discussion. College football, however, requires some style points. The NFL doesn't. These are all professionals. This game is about winning. And the Packers won. That is what matters. They won. They're 8-6. They control their own destiny. One quick thing, Jason, I can't believe you're making me discuss a damn kicker on the show, but we will, and I will actually do so happily. Mason Crosby made a field goal to win the game today, a 32-yarder. He was kicking a brick in the ice, in the snow. Well, not really the snow, in the cold against Chicago. Outside of that real big funk in 2013, how good has Mason Crosby been over the last 10 years? But this leads me to the one discussion I want to have, because I know you and I disagreed on it. It's 7-0 or 7-3. I can't remember exactly at the time. But the Packers have a 4th-and-2 after failing on a short toss play to Montgomery on a 4th down. And the Packers would be kicking about a 42-yard field goal at that point. Everybody's argument is take the points. And I saw that all over the place. And Jason, you were one of them who said it as well. Take the points. Here is my counterargument. Let's see what you say. I don't think Mike McCarthy was just getting greedy and saying, I want to be up 14 and I want 14 points. I don't think that's what he was doing. I tend to think that you watch the field goal that Crosby kicked before the half and it was a knuckleball. I think that my opinion is Mike McCarthy has more information than any of us possible. And maybe Crosby told him at this end of the field is where he was struggling. And he didn't think a 42-yard field goal was a gimme as it usually is. That's why I tend to think Mike McCarthy went for it. It's why I don't criticize the fact that he went for it instead of kicking a quote-unquote and a big quote-unquote chip shot field goal. So what are your thoughts on the take the points crowd?
Well, I was part of it, and I think I also – you got to do field goal math when you're watching the game on the field, and I might have been guilty of not doing the field goal math because you got to add 17 yards to wherever they're at in terms of where the kick is going to be coming from. So if you're like, oh, they're at the 30. I mean, it's a 30-yard field goal. No, it's not. It's a 47-yard field goal if you're at the 30. So things like that you have to take into consideration. And also we're spoiled, you know, as much as we're spoiled by Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is a lot better football player than Mason Crosby. But Crosby's been really good over the course of his 10 seasons with the Packers. I just want to give him some love because he hit a game winner. And it's been a while since he's done one. I mean, I remember he hit the game winner against the Giants in 2011 to keep the Packers undefeated. He's had some big kicks since then. You know, he had a big game winner in his very first game kicking for the Packers against the Eagles on opening day in 2007. That was when Brett Favre was still quarterbacking the Packers. So Crosby has been with this team for an incredibly long time. And I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think the season that he struggled was actually 2012. And it was in the beginning of training camp in 2013 when they brought Giorgio Tavecchio in. And I know Jersey Al was freaking out when – they had a Italian place kicker in the house and a lefty on top of that. But he wasn't able to beat Crosby out. And they stuck with him and he turned it around and has become one of the better kickers in the league. You know, you're right, Jacob, to your point. I'm fine to say I was wrong in that case, because I think, you know, we have to remember Soldier Field, the wind. I don't know what the wind patterns are like at Soldier, but I know that I've heard that at Lambeau Field, kickers struggle. There's crazy wind there. You know, Crosby's uber familiar with his own home stadium, but he probably did have a discussion with McCarthy about his comfort level in terms of kicking, and so the Packers decide to go for it there. It's going to be the old argument of if they do it, if they make it, the coach is a genius. If they don't, we second guess the heck out of them always, and then it's really convenient to say, oh, you should have taken the points, take the points. I say that usually, you know, early in games, and that's just kind of my MO. I don't know that I was, and I'd have to go back and look, but when I'm watching the NFC Championship game in Seattle, I don't think I was among the crowd of people that said go for it when the Packers got inside the 10-yard line twice early in the game. You know, in that type of a game where points are going to come at a premium, you take the points. In a cold-weather game, you mentioned the weather, Jacob, when a cold-weather game where the ball is like literally like kicking a brick, or as Mason Crosby described it in an interview earlier this week, like go outside and kick your car tire, you got to be smart about it. And if Mason Crosby, a 10-year vet, isn't confident he can make it, then I think the Packers definitely made the right choice. You gave Mike McCarthy some props earlier for calling a good game and making some adjustments and doing some good things. You know, he kind of got away from using Montgomery at one point. He went back to Montgomery late in the game. You know, so he finally went back to something that was working when his calling card tends to be getting away from it and having it cost the Packers games in the long run. Good call there going forward, even though the Packers didn't pick it up. And at least we don't have to sit here and continue talking about how that play might have possibly derailed the entire season because, like you said, Jacob, the Packers won and that's all that matters.
It is all that matters. My brief thought on Mason Crosby, you know, I've talked about it before, this coaching staff, this front office in general, sometimes loyal to a fault. And that was really what I thought with Mason Crosby in 2013, was that how long are you just going to watch this guy shank field goal after field goal after field goal? And it was just, it was painful to watch because, you know, I've talked to Mason Crosby briefly a couple times. Seems like a cool guy. It just, for whatever reason, he had the yips or whatever you want to call them. It was just painful to watch him because he came on the field and, I mean, extra points at that point were still from the goal line and they were eventful, or at least they felt like they were eventful. Well, he's been great ever since then. And when he comes on the field, I had no doubt that Crosby was going to boot that field goal through the uprights. No doubt. Now, I know that hasn't exactly played out all the time, but again, no doubt for me whatsoever. And I had one other thing I want to add, because I can't believe I didn't bring this up earlier. Well, you know what? I'll bring it up now. I'm calling an audible, so we'll call this New York Bozo. Jason, the Bears kick a field goal to tie the game. Packers get the ball. What are you thinking before that drive starts?
Honestly, the actual exact thoughts in my mind were, you know, my actual thought was throw the ball deep. These Bears safeties are not good. Throw the ball deep. And I was thinking Adams, because Adams has kind of become the deep ball guy. And just try to see if you can get a flag. I know that's a terrible attitude and a defeatist mentality to take, but I was just kind of hoping that they could get themselves into a decent field goal range and at least get a try to try and win this game. I mean, I wasn't thinking touchdown. I was just thinking, hey, just get close, get a chance. You know, you obviously are going to not have any problem draining the clock because they don't have any timeouts. One thing I didn't think about was, okay, great, you completed a deep ball. You got to run everybody down to the ball. That was a 60-plus yard pass. And you got to run everybody down to the ball, and you got to gimpy Aaron Rodgers, and you got to get the ball spiked, and you have no timeouts. You got to somehow stop the clock. So little things we don't think about. They all sound great in theory, but there's a lot of things that go into managing a very short window of time like that when you have to score points. I didn't have any doubt that the Packers could do it. It didn't seem like the momentum was really going their way. They did some really great things on offense today. They did some really tough deep things on they had some tough drives, I should say. So I was just kind of standing there numb. I think I was more in shock that I just couldn't believe that I was even having to deal with the situation. You know, like you said, they got up by three possessions. And Chicago closed the window really quickly. And I thought after the Christine Michael touchdown run, we were looking at the same thing as last week. We're going to see Brett Hundley, and Rodgers is going to get some rest, and we're all going to get to relax and enjoy the rest of our Sunday. But it wasn't to be.
It was not. However, when they got the ball and I saw they had enough time to get down the field, it's very simple for me. Lane Taylor mentioned he had a flashback to 2013. I did as well. Not just the Randall Cobb play, but the whole drive. 88 yards for the crown is what that one was. This wasn't 88 yards for the crown, but nonetheless, Aaron Rodgers only makes memories at Soldier Field, at that litter box that is known as Soldier Field. I had not supreme confidence because I wasn't guaranteeing it, but I had very high confidence that they were going to kick a field goal or score a touchdown if there's a breakdown and win the game. Because that's what Aaron Rodgers does when he's at Soldier Field. Whether it's a deep ball to Randall Cobb, whether it's starting fast in the NFC Championship game in 2010, or whether it's a deep ball to Jordy Nelson today, essentially to win the game. So that was my feeling. And that brings us to the final segment of the Bears game, and that is the ticket king of the game. And Jason, I will let you go first. Who's your guy?
Well, I got to go with Ty. I got to go with Ty Montgomery. 160-plus yards, two scores on the day, just an incredible grit. And one thing we didn't talk about, and I don't know how much of a factor this was, I heard this talked about a little bit leading up to the game, was the cold weather and he's got the sickle cell trait, and I didn't know if there was a consideration there in terms of if he might have some issues. I mean, it was cold last week at Lambeau. I don't know if it was a different type of cold, but didn't really appear to affect Montgomery too much. He was outstanding as the lead runner on this team. He's going to continue to be that guy through the rest of the season, whether he's on film or not. One thing that you cannot coach or one thing that you cannot stop on film and with your knowledge is a man's will to stay on his feet. And so if tacklers don't bring their A game, they're going to get run over. They are going to be standing there watching Ty Montgomery run into the end zone, and they're going to be reading his name on the back of his jersey because he just does not go down easily. He's a delight to watch that way after, you know, not having that type of a guy on this offense for a long time. I mean, I think back to some of the good running backs the Packers have had over the last 10 years, even more, like even Amon Green. I mean, Amon Green was a great running back, but I don't think he was necessarily difficult to bring down like that. I mean, we've seen Montgomery break out of tackle after tackle and make play after play, and just when you didn't think there were any yards to be had, he finds another 5 or 6 yards. I mean, he's the type of guy that's going to keep drives alive for the Packers and be another weapon that's going to give them more and more chances to succeed as the season goes along. So stats were fantastic. He was, you know, obviously, to me, player of the game. It was an easy choice for me in terms of who my ticket king of the game was going to be today. Ty Montgomery, just total beast mode at Soldier Field.
And normally I would agree with you if the game had not ended the way that it did. And I kind of gave my speech for ticket king of the game earlier, but I mean, I'm going to give it again. Again, one leg, maybe healthy, cold, nasty, on the road, division game. Quarterback is sacrificing his body. He's just giving a total effort to win a game that shows how much this matters to him. He's 4-0. Him and the team are 4-0 the last four games largely because of his great play. It's 3rd and 11. It's at Soldier Field. The wind is howling. The fans are screaming. It's freezing cold. And if the Packers don't pick up a first down at minimum, then maybe the Bears have a chance to win that game of regulation. Instead, he hits his guy, Jordy Nelson, down the middle of the field. Again, no touchdown passes. I know that. But for all the garbage that Aaron Rodgers gets about not being able to deliver when it matters the most, all the nonsense that Bob McGinn writes solely for clicks, all that was put to bed today. No, they weren't losing. You know, you can nitpick in the fact that, you know, the old famous Skip Bayless saying, and I hate that I just mentioned him on the air, but I did, was down by 4, 1st and 10, and it's 20. Okay, no, it wasn't that. But it was a money throw that he didn't use his legs at all down the middle of the field at Soldier Field to win the game. My ticket king of the game is Aaron Rodgers because he is the king of quarterbacks, and he's the king of the Packers, and he's the best player in the freaking league, and the Packers are lucky to have him. And without him, this team would have gone 4-12 at 4-6. I firmly believe that. So Jason's got Montgomery. I've got Aaron Rodgers. We're going to move on to the Minnesota Vikings. In case you haven't seen, the wheels have come off in Minnesota. They are 2-7 since starting 5-0. They're now 7-7, and they cannot win the NFC North. However, they can still compete for a wild card spot, so it's not as if they have nothing to play for. Mike Zimmer is a very good coach. So if the Packers are going to win this game, it won't be because the Vikings laid down and played dead. Sam Bradford has become Sam Bradford. The Vikings offensive line, as I mentioned, is a train wreck. Adrian Peterson's back. Big deal if you're talking to me. I don't think that matters. Their defense isn't the 85 Bears. Who could have ever foreseen that coming besides, you know, anyone with a rational mind? But their defense is still very good, and the Vikings do present some matchup problems. The one thing that I think is the biggest thing, and I'll mention to it now, Jason, when I ask, what is the most worrisome thing to you? And to me, it's the Vikings' pass rush is vicious. And you saw some stuff today that the Bears did by bringing pressure on the edge with their corners. DeMontre Hurst and some others were blitzing into the backfield, and Aaron Rodgers quite simply just can't escape that right now. He's got, you know, like I mentioned, he's not healthy. He's playing through pain, And he simply can't escape that anymore. And I think the Vikings do a good job in general of keeping him in the pocket when he's at full strength. Now he's compromised. But the good news here is the last time these two teams played, the Vikings won 17-14. The good news is this Packers offense is much better than it was the first time these two teams played. Devontae Adams is not bad. Jordy Nelson is further removed from his injury. Ty Montgomery is the team starting running back. The offensive line has gelled. I know they didn't do the best job today, but I do think the majority of the Bears' sacks were coverage sacks, and I think some of those would have been eliminated had Rodgers been able to extend the play like he normally does. But the Vikings' pass rush is still very good. I think that it could still give the Packers some fits. That is what I tend to believe is the most terrifying matchup, if you will, for the Packers in this game. Jason, do you have anything different?
Yeah, I do. I'll go on the other side of the ball. I think you raised valid points, and obviously the Vikings defense is still pretty good. They didn't have Harrison Smith today. I don't know if he's going to be back next week. I'm sure he will. It seems like everybody's always at full strength against the Packers. But, you know, it's kind of how I like it, because then no one has any excuse when Green Bay beats them anyway. So I'm going to go with that. That middle of the field situation I saw today was absolutely gut-wrenching. It was the most disappointing part of the day for me. I know this defense is better than that, and they can do better than that, and they need to be better than that, and that's just as much on Dom Capers to put them in that position as it is on the players to go out there and make it happen. So now you've got another offense that has a very prolific tight end in Kyle Rudolph. I want to see Morgan Burnett roam in that middle of the defense a little bit more. I want to see him in the defensive backfield. And I need to see a big game from Demaryius Randall. So my biggest concern is, as much as that offensive line for Minnesota is not great, the Packers just aren't generating much of a pass rush on a consistent basis. I don't know if they can get to Sam Bradford. I don't care what Sam Bradford has or has not done. You give him too much time back there, he's going to find guys like Stephon Diggs, Charles Johnson, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, Kyle Rudolph. All of those guys are going to become problems. And that middle of the field was way, way too wide open. You talked about Demaryius Randall earlier and the struggles that he had today and why he was playing off. I have to wonder if part of the reason why isn't because his return from that core injury isn't allowing him to play press and get into his deep backpedal off the line of scrimmage that way, or if he just still isn't at that full strength and he's just better off with a little bit of a head start. I watched the interception last week in the end zone against the Seahawks, you know, the one where he raced across the field. He stood still at the snap. He was reading Russell Wilson the whole way, but he was about 10 yards off the ball. I mean, he's not playing press coverage. So, you know, the Packers have to kind of play their defense to the schemes and the skill set of these players. If these guys are injured, you know, I mean, Quentin Rollins was dealing with an injury too. He had a groin injury as well. You know, if these guys aren't at full go and the cold weather doesn't help muscle pulls, maybe that's a factor as well and why they have to keep everything in front of them. But I'd still like to see guys that I don't even know who they are without looking them up online carving up the Packers in the middle of the field when they shouldn't be. So if I have to see that a second week in a row, and especially if it becomes a problem for the Packers and they aren't as lucky as they were at times today, then it's going to be a really, really rough day. If you thought today was upbeat lollipop, let the middle of the field beat the Packers next week and kind of end their season, and you'll see the return of Meltdown JP.
Meltdown JP. I imagine that is just a joy to be around as it's happening. But one more question I have before we go into our prediction. It's what matchup do you think, looking at this game? Because the last game, the Packers really, if you look at their matchups, they didn't really win any of them, and they lost 17-14. But what matchup do you think the Packers have to win the most in this game? And mine is similar to the way normally I would say the pass rush has to get after Sam Bradford. And I do still believe that that has to be the case. However, similar to how the Packers operate, when Aaron Rodgers is making big plays down the field and doing his Aaron Rodgers thing, that's when the whole team kind of feeds off that stuff and they play better when that kind of stuff is happening, as opposed to when it's a struggle and they kind of have to scrape everything like they did earlier in the season or last year. The Vikings are similar, in my opinion, when Adrian Peterson is doing superhuman things. Now, I know I went on record earlier and said I think he's washed up and I think he's old and he's done and the Vikings' offensive line is terrible, and I still do believe all – well, I shouldn't say I think Adrian Peterson's done, but he's not Adrian Peterson. I still believe most of those things, but I do think that the Packers have to slow him down. And it doesn't have to be the last way, like it was – I think it was 13 carries for 31 yards before he exited the game. I don't think it has to be like that. But you can have Adrian Peterson rumbling in the secondary and making plays in the secondary and finishing runs down the field and looking like the Adrian Peterson of old. I think the Packers, you can kind of see their run defense. It's not as good as it was earlier. Now, missing their best run defender on the edge probably isn't helping. But they're not as good against the run as they were earlier in the season. We kind of imagined that was going to be the case. It's not a bad run defense, I don't think, but it's not a great one like it was earlier in the year either. I think they need to be good enough and force Sam Bradford to make some plays in third and long, and I know he did the last time these two teams played. I just can't picture him doing it a second time. So I think the Packers have to slow down Adrian Peterson, which seems like the key to the game against the Vikings for the last 10 years, but I think it has to be that one more time, and that's the other thing. This may be the last time Adrian Peterson plays against the Packers as a whole, but probably the last time he plays against the Packers as a member of the Minnesota Vikings. So that is mine. I think the Packers, you stop AP, I think you beat the Vikings. Jason, what are your thoughts on the matchup the Packers have to win this game?
You know, it's crazy you picked AP, because that's something that I feel like former me, and I don't know what new me is, I'm just kind of saying former me maybe last year and beyond would have picked, because it's always you just – the games when Adrian Peterson has gone off, and statistically I think he's had some of his best games against Green Bay. I mean, it would make sense since he plays him twice a year. But I'm not going to jinx it by saying that Peterson's not a factor. So definitely key on Adrian Peterson and shut him down, Packers defense. But that's not really my key here. My key is getting to Sam Bradford. It's that pass rush. Take advantage of that Minnesota offensive line. Do what you're supposed to do. The Packers have faced offensive lines that weren't supposed to be very good. The Indianapolis Colts come to mind, and they barely touched Andrew Luck all day. They need to get to Sam Bradford early, and they need to get to him often. They didn't in week two. That was a world away. Those were two completely different teams. The Vikings were rolling at that point. They didn't have as many injuries as they do now. The teams were afraid of them. They weren't aware that they weren't as good as they were, like you knew, Jacob. The rest of the league didn't know yet, and so the Packers lost that game, and they didn't get a lot of pressure on Sam Bradford. They need to get to him early and get inside of his head. He will make mistakes. You want this to become a situation where Sam Bradford, when he drops back every single time to throw, he has to worry about where that ball is going and if it's going to land in the wrong hands. You want a quarterback like Sam Bradford overthinking. That's the best-case scenario, because he will make mistakes, and he will look very different than he did in week two in the game where they beat the Green Bay Packers, where he was untouched and everything he threw landed into a Vikings receiver's hand and he just had the day of his life. That can't be the case. If you've got a matchup that looks good, where you've got better players and on paper and on the field, you should win. You need to go out and do it. Now, I know that the Packers are struggling with their pass rush because you've got Clay Matthews still recovering from the shoulder injury. He's just not himself. Nick Perry, probably not going to play. Jerron Elliott had to put a club cast on his hand today. He had a hand injury, and he is a key with Nick Perry being out. What can he bring? Julius Peppers can't play a full game. You got to limit his snaps in order for him to be effective. He's not an every down guy, a guy that can go out there and play all game long and be effective the whole afternoon. So it's a tall task, but maybe this is where we see some of the defensive backs step up. Morgan Burnett's got a decent blitz ability. Haha, Clinton Dix struggles when he blitzes, but maybe he gets back there and grabs one. Maybe this is finally the week where we see Jake Ryan or Blake Martinez come through on a stunt and get to the quarterback. It can happen. It was great to see Martinez out there. He played mostly on special teams. I don't think he got out there on defense until the very end of the game. I didn't see him playing in the defense very much at the onset, but great to see him get healthy. And as a side note, I know we're talking about matchups and concerns. It is good to see some of these guys at least returning to action. I know that they're not fully healthy, but no team is at this point. Every team is dealing with injuries. They're all banged up. The Packers are dealing with some pretty significant injuries to guys that they really need and they're counting on. But at least these guys are dressing. At least now Mike McCarthy has to think about who his 46 guys are that he's going to dress for these last couple weeks. But Packers got to get after it. That pass rush has to get home. If they don't, I think it's going to be a tough day for the Packers. I don't know how many points they're going to be able to put up. The weather seems pretty favorable. It's supposed to be over 30. Sunny that day. That's still a week away. Things can change, but we're not looking at a freezing cold game. Please, for the love of God, I want to see Sam Bradford's face implanted into the Lambeau Field turf on Sunday. That is my Christmas wish.
Not a bad Christmas wish to have. And, you know, one other thing about last time these two teams met is the pass rush actually did a pretty good job, I thought, that night. The biggest thing with Sam Bradford was just making plays you never really expected him to make. And, you know, Jason, I think you mentioned this time the Packers pass rush not as good now as it was on the second week of the season because, you know, you mentioned Clay Matthews hurt, Nick Perry may or may not play. The list goes on and on. I think you're looking at a good point there is, you know, if they can stop the run and get into pass rush situations, you're right. Sam Bradford is at his worst when there's pressure somewhat around him. But if there's not pressure around him, then he's not a bad quarterback. And that's why he's been an average quarterback most of his career, because the good ones are the ones that can stand up to pressure and still make. Sam Bradford can't do that. If he does get pressure, he'll make mistakes and throw interceptions, which, you know, the Packers have had a propensity to come up with those the last, I got what, 8 interceptions the last 2 games, one of them on a Hail Mary, some of them on tipped, whatever. They all count the same. 8 interceptions in 2 games. I think they'll need that again. And that brings us to our prediction for the game. It is Packers-Vikings. It is noon kickoff at Lambeau Field, Christmas Eve. So it is a Saturday kickoff. So everybody that's making your Christmas plans, remember, the Packers and the Vikings will play on Christmas Eve. Hopefully they give us an early Christmas present. Big game. If Green Bay wins, they guarantee themselves a playoff game the next week against the Detroit Lions. And I call it that because it's likely an elimination game. Winner of that is in. Loser probably goes home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I am picking the Green Bay Packers because the Packers have played better over the last 4 games. They have won all 4 of them. I like them to get to 5-0 in their last 5 games because I think they are a better team than the Minnesota Vikings, and I have thought that since the beginning of the season, even after the Vikings beat them. The Vikings beat them at home in their first game in a brand-new stadium. Everything as far as intangible was leaning toward Minnesota in that game. Sam Bradford played his first game, played out of his mind. I don't anticipate him to do that again. Aaron Rodgers did not play that well. He is playing well now. He's playing at an MVP level. I expect him to do the same. Maybe not 5 touchdowns to 0 interceptions, but a solid game. Devontae Adams is better than he was back then. Jordy Nelson is more removed. Hopefully Randall Cobb can get back in the action. Ty Montgomery looks good. The offensive line looks good. They're getting more turnovers on defense, which they did not get against the Vikings the first time they played, or really – until the last couple of weeks, they haven't really gotten them. Let's be up. Huh, excuse me. I'm so overcome with emotion here. Let's be honest. I like Green Bay to win this game. I think it'll be tight for the most part. You know, some nervous moments because it's a division game. The Vikings do still have things to play for. And as I mentioned, Mike Zimmer is one of my most respected coaches in all of football for the way that he prepares his team. He has them ready every single week, even if it doesn't show up on the field today. I think you'll have them up and ready for this Colts game. I don't think you'll have a team that you see that has their cars, as I said before the game today, you know, a team that has their cars running and the heaters on and they're ready to get back inside their little dome and, you know, just kind of run and hide from the cold. As you mentioned, it won't be that cold. But I don't think the Vikings are thinking about the golf course just yet. So I like Green Bay, but in a tighter game, I like them to win 27-20 and give them a chance to win the NFC North on New Year's Day against the Detroit Lions. But I like Green Bay. Jason, who you got?
Going Packers, and for some reason, I know they just won 30-27 today, but for some reason I've got 31-27 running through my head. I'm not going to take the bait of picking a too low of a scoring game like I have the last couple weeks. I've been picking correctly, fortunately, and the Packers have been winning, so partially heart picks, a little bit of head pick, but I'm going to put some more points on the board this time and try to be a little bit more realistic because the weather's going to be a little bit warmer, if we can say that, about a 30-degree day. But I do think that both teams are going to be able to put up some points. That sounds like a lot of points for a Minnesota Vikings team. But I'm just kind of going with the trends. I'm just kind of going with the averages here. They probably shouldn't put up that many points, but for some reason I just see what the Bears did today, and I want to try to keep it real. I think the Packers might have some trouble in the middle of the field. They've got that tight end situation to take care of. I don't know if the pass rush can get there, so it's going to be another close game. You know, I don't love these holiday games, but that's because we've seen too many of them get spoiled recently. So would love to see the Packers get back on track in a holiday game for the first time in a while. I think the last time they won one, and this is just off the cuff, was 2011. I know they played the Bears on Christmas Day, and they won that game. I don't know. They also beat the Lions on Thanksgiving that year. I don't know if they had any holiday games in 2012. They lost to the Lions horribly on Thanksgiving in 13 because Rodgers was hurt still at the collarbone. He was out. So feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, Jacob, but it's been a while. Would love for them to get off the schneid and make it, like I said, make it a Merry Christmas. And for me, living here, that couldn't be the sweeter than the best apple, cherry, whatever pie you want to put out there for dessert on Christmas night. So I'm going Packers, 31-27.
So Jason and I both like the Packers, and Jason, just off the top of my head, I believe you're right that last time they won on a holiday was Christmas against the Bears, because I was going back through them. I don't believe there was a holiday game in 2014. I know last year they lost to the Bears on Thanksgiving, and this year they didn't play on a holiday until Christmas Eve. So one other Christmas gift here for you living in Minnesota would be beating the Vikings eliminates them from the playoffs. Vikings lose, they are done, they are out, it's over, it's done. And in an all-in season, the Vikings at best finish 8-8 and miss the playoffs. And they don't have a first-round pick because that belongs to the Philadelphia Eagles through the Sam Bradford trade. That is going to do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at PackerPulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. Want to thank our sponsors, Ticket King. Like I said, guys, one more game that's guaranteed at Lambeau Field. Grab your tickets on Christmas Eve. It's right down the stadium. Walk in, cheer on the Pack that night against the Minnesota Vikings. Get them a chance to win the NFC North on New Year's Day the following week. And our Ticket Kings of the game this week, Jason went with Ty Montgomery. I went with Aaron Rodgers. Our Ticket King is also brought to you by Adam Check, our guy. If you guys want to know, every week the game picks give you a direct link to it. It's a donation for his kids' college fund and some other things. Adam Check's a great guy. One other thing I wanted to bring up is I didn't want to spend a ton of time on this because I don't really like the drama or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I'm sounding like a jerk here, but whatever. Today is the three-year anniversary of my grandma Balk passing away. So this show is in memory of Ida Balk. She used to love telling me stories and listen to my stuff about sports, even though she had no idea what the hell I was talking about. I know she's listening to somewhere, and I appreciate all the things she taught me in the time that she did. So that is who this show is brought to you by today, Ida Balk. So rest in peace, Graham. We miss you. Thank you guys for listening. We both like the Packers to win next week. Packers win 30-27 over the Chicago Bears. What a game. Everybody rest, relax, get ready. We're up again in 6 days, Packers and Vikings, Christmas Eve at Lambeau Field. Thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.